This is a good one. I like it. Let it play. Premier Variety Showcase presents the Spotlight Folly Special. Brought to you in part by Smiles. With promotional consideration from Rainbows. Hello. Hi there. Hey, everybody. It's me. I'm back. Not that I really went anywhere. As far as you know, I've been here the whole time. Just patiently waiting for you to download me and listen to me. That's right, now it's all on you. I've been here. Where have you been? Let's talk about it. It gets a little weird in the beginning. I'm going to admit that right now. I try to admit it almost every episode. The beginnings are rough. They are. I don't know how to just say hi to people that might not be there and might not be people. It's one person. You're one person. Let's face it. You didn't call over your friends and listen to this at a podcast party like I was hoping. I send out invitations. But that's okay. I digress. And quite skillfully, I might add. This is an exciting episode. This is the Spotlight Folly Special. I should start with that. I'm a minute in, and you don't even know what you're listening to. This is the Spotlight Folly Special, and I am your host, Nathan to the Gera. God, that was horrible. I hate myself. And this is a very special episode indeed, and a very different episode. You may have noticed a slight change in the intro. And you may notice a slight change in the format. That has a lot to do with comments and suggestions, a lot of inward focus and thinking, and the fact that my stupid fucking computer crashed on me and left me with nothing to do but to wing it. And that is what I am doing. So I've thrown this together. I found the song, the piano, listen to it. It's nice, right? Still there. It's still great. I still don't have his permission, so don't let this guy know that I am using his song for my betting. But you know what? I'm going to give credit where credit is due. His name is Jeff Peters. That's G-E-O-F-F Peters. And it's called Good to You, piano solo. It's called Good to You, open parentheses, piano solo, closed parentheses. Yes, overkill, redundant, unnecessary. I see that, but he's a talented young man. You know what? I don't like you attacking him like this. I'm just going to put that out there. I'm going to defend him because that's who I am. But you don't need to attack him. You're better than that. We both know this. This is also an exciting episode. Not because I'm losing my mind and talking into a microphone at the same time, but also because this has an amazing interview with an amazing comedian and talented musician and podcaster, famous for the Walking the Room podcast, Mr. Greg Barrett. He's also the author of a book that was well known, He's Just Not That Into You. He also wrote on Sex and the City. He had his own TV show. It was a talk show. He does stand-up comedy at alternative venues. We get into that. He kind of puts on his own shows, but he also does clubs around the states. He does a lot, and he's a professional, to say the least. Because I'm going to be honest. I was a presumptuous prick and said some jerky things, but he was very nice the whole way through. Because that's what pros do. I might have gotten a little nervous and stuttery. I could have edited it. But I wanted to leave it all in. Raw. You know, I got a little gushy. I said some stuff that I probably shouldn't have said. Trey Nathan. But I'll be damned if it isn't a good interview. So I really hope you enjoy it. And if you do, please comment and rate and help me get more awesome interviews, because that is how I got to this point, was you guys commenting and rating and liking and so on and so forth. Your support, going to the fan page, Facebook Premier Variety Showcase Presents, going to the Twitter, Spotlight Follies, all of these things. My Twitter, Nathan_Guerra. All of these things, I could talk about it all, but the point is that you guys helped me get this awesome guest, so I really hope you enjoy it. And please forgive my moments of idiocy. There's a point where basically my nervous energy rubs off on him, and it's two men stuttering at each other, but it's still highly entertaining. So, don't judge. Leading up to the interview, I have a bit of Barrett comedy from his special, That Guy from That Thing. And then I also have some music. The intro was from his band, The Reigning Monarchs, and that was And Then They Were Upon Us. And taking us out, I will have some more The Reigning Monarchs, because it's damn fine music. So without much further adoedness, I bring unto thee my interview with Walking the Rooms, Greg Barrett. Enjoy. Won't you? You will.
I do get recognized a lot. Let me tell you a real quick story. I get recognized quite a bit. I'm in Austin, Texas, a couple months ago. 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm at a Denny's. And yeah, I got big-ass money and I spend it. I don't give a shit. I'm fancy as fuck and I'll have moons over my hammy side of bacon. That's how I do it. Oh, yeah. I'm totally Hollywood. That's how I do it. I'm fancy. So I'm out of Denny's. 2 o'clock in the morning, and this dude clearly recognizes me because he wanders over to the table and he goes like this. He walks over and he goes, "Ha ha! Woo!" And I don't know what the correct response to that is, right? I was like, "Oh, woohoo!" And he goes, "Hey, dude! Hey, dude! Hey, dude, build me a house." That's right, yes. This happens at least once a week. They will say that, or they'll say, "Move that bus!" Move that bus. So I say politely to the guy, I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir, you have me confused for Ty Pennington of ABC's Extreme Makeover Home Edition." And he goes, "Fuck you, dude, build me a house." I'm like, "Fuck, am I going to get in a fight as Ty Pennington? How's that going to go? What a shitty life Ty Pennington must have. People threatening him and shit all the time. You better build me a porch, bitch. I don't even have a hammer. Just a sweater."
Hello?
Hello?
Hey.
Are you good?
I'm good, Matt.
Okay, I'd see. I'm not keen on 5 minutes. I didn't know if that was a real 5 minutes or like a Hollywood 5 minutes. I didn't know what 5 minutes was.
I go in increments of 60 seconds.
That is very classy. Yeah. That's very classy.
So I'll go ahead and I'll just go ahead and go with the full, like, around the dial 5 times.
That's considerably better than what psychiatrists think an hour is. So,
right?
You're a classy gentleman.
I try and be.
So this is it. This is it. I'll just go ahead and introduce you. This is Greg Barrett, author, writer, comedian, musician, podcaster, just a man with many hats, you are, aren't you?
Yeah, I like to put my foot in, you know. I like to do, I don't know if I do any more than most of the people I know these days, but yeah.
Now, your podcast, Walking the Room, is one of my favorites. It's
thank you.
It's quite honest, I think, is a good word for it. Maybe?
I think so, too. I appreciate that. It sort of found its own way of being very naturally and very honestly, because I didn't want to do one. at the time, I was like, well, Marin does one and Pardo does one. I don't see the point. And Dave was like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Shit, you do it for your fans. So there must be people that want to hear you that aren't going to get an album from you in a couple years or whatever, however long it takes you to make a fucking DVD. And I was like, I guess you're right. And so we just gave it a shot. He had been trying one by himself. He didn't want to do one by himself. So we just, you know. And I think the ground rules were no ground rules.
True.
You know, just sit down and be. I mean, the cool thing, the reason it ended up being the way it is that Dave and I are friends, and we hadn't spent lots of time together. And sometimes it's the only time we get to see each other. And so we're having our friendship on air once a week, you know, with topics. You know, we definitely go in and go, oh, let's maybe talk about this or whatever. But I mean, for the most part, you know, it really is just two guys reacquainting themselves and saying, oh, fuck, this happened this week.
And then sometimes you will go so far as to introduce a third, some of which I'll just name a few. Nikki Glaser, Rob Delaney, Will Anderson, Patton Oswalt, Karen Kilgariff. All these amazing guests. Are they just as well friends hanging out with you in the closet?
Pretty much. I mean, we didn't know Nikki and we didn't know Rob. I that's not true. I knew Rob Delaney. I think sometimes you just think of somebody. At the beginning, it literally was like Patton had said, hey, I want to come on the show. And we were like, all right, shit, fuck, all right, great. and then Posehn goes, I want to come on the show. And so we were like, you know, we kind of, and I think it was really more like we just want to come hang out. And, you know, it wasn't like either of them needed it for their careers. So we just had people on that really seemed like they wanted to be there, you know. And I had run into Gil Martin, who was one of our favorite guests, Paul, and he's like, I listen to it every week and blah, blah. And I go, well, fuck, you should come on. And he turned out to be an excellent guest. So that's sort of the criteria, is that you have some experience with it and seem like you'd want to be talked over and not asked about your career.
That's convenient. I like that. Now, I was listening to a fairly recent episode, and there was not a debate, but it kind of came up in discussion a bit, and I was just... The idea of the Podcuddle versus the Starfish Circus, in that now when you go out and you perform, people still want you to do the podcast, basically. They want you to talk like you do in the closet a little bit. Is that what's happening, or...?
There's a lot of factors. At the very beginning, the reason we did the Starfish Circus was that I have an open invitation to perform at Largo in Los Angeles. But Largo is a steep ticket. You know, it's like a $25, sometimes $30 ticket, and it's a big room. It holds like 280. And the podcast just simply wasn't big enough for us to do a live podcast. So we decided to go and do our stand-up and grab our celebrity buddies, you know, Patton and Brian, and do something sort of based on the podcast that Dave and I would sort of host the show and be together. But that we would do it, and I'd get to bring my band, and it was just sort of everything, you know, in one big pile. But as time... as we continue to do the podcast, people really seem to like that dynamic. And when we would do the podcast shows, like at Meltdown or up at Sketchfest, people just dug it. They just love that. I think people want to see that dynamic. I think they feel like they could go see Dave and I do stand up or that. So you know, those seem to be the thing that seems to be the things people want to see. I mean, certainly we're doing a Starfish Circus next weekend in New York, and I think it's going to be great. But I don't know. You know, at some point you have to figure out what's the best way to get people in a room, and you know, I still do stand up by myself on the road and that kind of thing. So I don't know if the Starfish Circus will stay around or not.
Now, that kind of brings me to the next thing that I want to talk about was that you have your podcast, you're doing the Starfish Circus, and you also have the music, and I'm sure you're just still writing as well. And how do you stay sort of organized? How do you kind of keep it all together? How do you manage all those different hats, I guess?
I think it's just the way I'm made. I don't know. I mean, I just... you know, I'm always looking for things to do. I think it could be against my best interest to do it. You know, it's probably better if you focus on one thing and really try and be amazing at that. But I feel like I don't know how long I'm going to live for, and I don't want to not have had played in a band and had a podcast and toured live and written books and wrote my thing with my wife and tried all these, made pants, you know, tried all these different things. So, you know, I just pursue them. I have the time. You know, part of it is I'm a sober guy, so I don't have a very active social life, you know, in terms of, like, I don't go out and party very much. I'm not that guy. I'm not late at the bar, and I come home, and I write when I get home, and, you know, my wife and I work together, and I just manage to find it, you know, all the time. I wish I had more time for the band. The last record we made was in 2009, and we've been gearing up to make a record now since then, you know, and hopefully something's going to happen in May. We have songs written, but it's just a matter of getting into play, you know, and we play we end up playing 6 or 7 times a year. It's not that much.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah, because it's always attached to something, or, you know, then I do the Bring the Rock shows, which feature the band, and you know, so it's not like any one of these careers is either on fire, so there's time.
Well, definitely, I find that it seems like there's a commonality amongst most of the people that are doing as well as you. They're being successful is that sort of self drive thing. There's not a lot of room for not being that driven, and I was wondering, like, is that kind of what is helping you, like, the most right now, more than anything else, is just the fact that you are putting on your own show, that you are putting on the podcast, that you're doing the Starfish Circus, that you're doing all these things, and you're making it happen for yourself? Is that what's working for you? Or
I think, well, I mean, look, I would love it if somebody, you know, like, it would be great if someone came along and said, hey, we'd love to turn Walk in the Room into a TV show and just do it exactly the way you do it and not fuck with any of it and pay you a lot of money. You know, some days it's hard to continually self-produce things. You know, you're working on all, you know, you're on your Twitter feed and your Facebook feed and you're, you know, generating posters and artwork and all that kind of stuff. But I kind of love it. I mean, you know, you're running all these little entities and they're all mine. And I think after a while, a story begins to build and people start to understand you as different, you know. And I've had it's been difficult for me to come out from underneath the specter of that book I wrote, you know, a couple of years ago, because it's just, it was big, you know, it was as big as things get. And it colored me in a certain way and people had a certain perception about me. And so I do all these things in an effort, not just because of that, but I'm hoping that people will go, oh, okay, there's more there than what I thought. You know, I think, sometimes people just write me off as a self-help guy, and you know, that's hardly the case.
Well, you are a hilarious comedian. I got to be lucky enough to see you come through Addison and perform, and it was amazing, to say the least. And I noticed that you used some local comedians as your opening act. Is that something you normally do? Do you? Because I know some people, they like to bring specific people with them when they go on the road. What's your preference, I guess, is what I'm asking.
If there's guys I like in the area, I want to use the local guys. Yeah. I mean, definitely. I mean, sometimes they let me bring people, sometimes they don't. I like to take Dave with me every once in a while. I like to take Chris Fairbanks with me every once in a while, who's an Austin guy. But, like, Dave Little is my guy in Addison, and I love him, and he's a great guy. And Raj is another guy that was living there for a while that I liked, and I, Yeah, you know, when I go back to New York, there's two guys back there, Adam Cousins and Mark Normand, are guys I like. There's a Ryan Connor that I use up in Portland, and there's just guys that, you know, Jeff Bodart is a guy I use in the Midwest and sometimes down in Florida, and, you know, you just try and find people that you like, but if I can use local guys, totally.
There's been a weird, again, not debate, but just in the air of comedy has always been, alternative has been a word that comes up and then nobody really can ever define it. But, if you're putting on your own shows and you're definitely doing Meltdown and then you have, the latest on, I guess, is episode 100, where it's going to be, Jonah Ray, Patton Oswalt, Brian Bosane, and Paul Gilmartin again, I guess it's just basically, what am I trying to say here? When you are putting all this together I'm kind of getting lost in my own thoughts here because I'm getting so ahead
That's
of myself.
Right.
I'm trying to tie it all into basically that, you're doing all this sort of stuff yourself. And do you think that you qualify yourself as all alternative in that you, I don't know, but you're also doing clubs. Like, would you put yourself in the alternative label, I guess? Or do you even try to label yourself? Is that anything you
I don't
try
even
to...
know what that label means anymore.
Okay.
You know, the origin of it obviously came up with music and alternative bands. And alternative music sort of had its moment before it became indie, before it became whatever it is now. But it had its moment in the 90s. And we were, the group of guys that I came up with, the comics I started with, Patton and Brian and David Cross and the Mr. Show P guys and Sinacious D and Janine Garofalo and that whole pack of people, we all worked in alternative venues because nobody would hire us to work at the brick wall clubs. But none of us didn't want to work at comedy clubs. None of us didn't want to be comedians. There wasn't a name for it. So that's where the name came from. And then, you know, you've got your comedy nerds and your comedy elitists and your comedy snobs, and they have to classify everybody, and they like to, you know, pick and choose and all that kind of stuff. But it's that's just really sort of like, that's just a matter for the internet. Like, in the real world, you go to a room and a bunch of people show up and you entertain the fuck out of them. And they can pretend you're alternative or whatever. I just try and tell stories about my life. And that falls where it may. And you go through phases where you do certain kinds of comedy or you have certain topics, and maybe they fall into alternative, but maybe I'm talking about my kids, you know. Louis C.K. talks about really mundane, real things, but he does it in a hilarious way, and because of his look and demeanor, some people have decided, well, he's an alternative comic. But Louis C.K. never didn't do sets at the Cellar and never didn't want to just be a comedian. So I think that distinction sort of, I don't think it bears fruit anymore, you know. I think there are a lot of young comedy kids who need to identify themselves with a certain clique because it's like they give them an identity, just like when you were young and you liked certain bands and they gave you an identity. So I think there is that crew of people that, you know, like the UCB and all that kind of stuff. And I go there and I do sets, but I'm happy to also go to all the improvs. I just don't give a shit. I just want to do stand-up, you know? I mean, Sinatra entertained fucking people in rooms. That's what he did. He was an entertainer. That's what people do, you know? I go out with my band. I don't give a shit who's there. I don't care how old. If I have an audience, I will say this. If I have an audience of people, the people that are my fans are just fucking good people. Most of the people that I've met are just nice, solid people. They're just good human, like good fucking human beings, and they are a cross section of everything. I've got young fucking, you know, punk rock kids that like me, and I have old fucking women, and I love them just the same. I don't care as long as they fucking pay for a ticket. You know, that's all I care. I don't care who I sell to, just as long as I sell. You don't get to decide your place in the world either. The world sort of decides where you land, and that's just the way it is.
But you are getting to the place where you're performing for people more and more that do know who you are. They do know what to expect. They are there for Greg Barrett. Like, they're not just showing up at a comedy club. They're there for you, and they almost expect, because not to rehash anything that you already talked about too much, yeah. But you did mention something about how that basically people they want to hear you do the stuff that is from your podcast. You've coined so many terms already, and just hearing you say words like buttle or corndoggin or, friend or hobotang just sends people into a frenzy. So they're there for you at this point, is what I'm guessing, right?
Well, it depends. I did a casino last night in Morongo, which is like 2 hours east of here, you know, between here and Palm Springs. And, you know, some cuddlers came out, but then there were also, like, lots of people who were just there. And I talked about corndogging actually for a little bit, and there was a handful of people that cheered. So I think for the first time, I'm getting a lot of people that are coming out for my comedy because of the podcast. You know, I've always done okay ticket-wise. Since the book, but a lot, it would be a lot of women that would come out and then didn't know what my comedy would be and had a good time but didn't remain fans. They wouldn't come back, you know?
Right.
Which is fine. That's just the way it goes. But so now it is getting to be more of that, and I hope that, you know, as the podcast continues to grow, that we start to really fill some rooms. And, you know, I think it would be fun to be able to do these Starfish Circuses, but they're quite an event and there are a lot of people to put on, and I think we're not just at that point where we can fill a room just by being there. But I think if we say we're going to podcast and we're going to do Walking the Room, I think we can get people who want to see Dave and I go at each other or, you know, talk about our kids or whatever it is. I mean, a lot of people, you know, the nicest compliment that we got about the show was somebody was talking about it in the, you know, we had that thing, the Hot Dog Thunderdome.
Yeah, that's great.
On a little social network, and somebody was talking about the live one, the first one, with Kirkman and Brendan Walsh.
Right.
And they said, I laughed at this one the most, but it's by far not my favorite. Which means there's something else at work there that people don't just go to the podcast to laugh, but they get something out of it, and they like other moments better, which to me is like, what a worthwhile endeavor then. Then we're making something that isn't just disposable, you know, something that you can go back and, I don't know what that person got out of it, but they certainly had some connection to it that, you know, whether it was personal ideology or... you know, we spoke to some problem they were having, or they had some relatable, something.
Well, man, you've gotten so real sometimes. Like when you just talk about how, I don't want to get too rehashy on it, but there was one where you just were so down. You just wanted to throw in the towel, but you knew that you had the cuddlers. You knew you had those fans, and you kind of had that support system, and it really helped you so much. And you're at such a great point with that, and that in and of itself is a great place to be. And it kind of makes me wonder in my head where you were Oprah big at one point.
Yep.
And now you're at this point where when you're down, you have an entire community of people ready to lift you back up. So it's like, which was the bigger high for you? Which one? I mean, could you even choose?
By far.
Really?
This by far. Yeah, because people know me. I mean, that's the thing that's so beautiful about these podcasts, and every one of the other comics and I have talked about this. You know, I was just having this conversation with Pete Holmes the other day. You know, they know you, your fans know you, and they know you in a different kind of way, and they know you in a way where you have a shorthand with them. You know, I mean, we're going to talk about it tomorrow. Dave and I are doing a podcast, but I had a real setback this week, and I really, I tweeted some... I was trying to make some kind of funny point, but it sounded sad, and all of a sudden I started getting emails and texts and, you know, all this stuff, you know, and it was like, oh, shit, I didn't want to, like, set off the alarm. I felt bad, like maybe I should have broke my arm or something. But it was nice. It's amazing. It's nice to know that people, that they give a shit enough, and that you're, you know, and I think the other cool thing about this transaction, which is interesting, is that it is free. I think the best thing about it is free, you know, that we would, I mean, Dave and I, you know, Maron takes some of his and he shelves them and people can buy them. And I think, well, but they're worth buying. I don't know that, you know, maybe at some point we'll have too many and we can put them all in a pile and sell them for something. But, I mean, to us, that's not what we're trying to get out of it. I don't think money isn't the goal with this as much as it is trying to build an audience that we can do stand-up for, perform for, or, you know, sell T-shirts to or whatever, do those other endeavors that we like. I mean, I like making the T-shirts. I have a good time doing that stuff. You know, I have a good time doing the things that you get to do when you were in a punk band of, you know, having merch and making packages and sending stuff to people and doing it all around the world and all that kind of shit's really fun. And on the guys that I work with, the Paul Armstrong and my other buddy Angelo, who do all the artwork and create all the packaging and all that kind of stuff, like that shit's really fun. So So, I mean, the transaction works, and then everybody gets a free podcast. And I think, and it's easy. I mean, Dave and I, you know, it's just not hard. Once a week, sit in the closet and bullshit with each other, and then hope that it was mildly amusing and put it up on the internet.
And I think that the reason why it is that something else other than just coming for the laughter, and I'm not trying to peg anything or label anything here, but it is just that I've heard Doug Benson say that what ends up happening is that these people accrue hours, and you're talking into their ears while they're doing everything that they're doing, and they become familiar with you. And what's even greater, though, is that, like, with, you know, a Doug Benson or something like that, is that that's just that's the true. But he's talking about movies, and you guys are talking about your lives. You're talking about the truth. You're being completely open. You're doing that constantly into people's ears, and I think that is what makes them want to relate to you so much. Is that is such a endearing quality, and it's so real. It's something that you don't really encounter, I think, is a problem. Maybe,
but I also think, like, everyone, you get a different version of it. I just started listening to Gil Martin's, which I love. I listen to Marin religiously, and I listen to Pardo because he's such an old friend. And then I've tried other ones. Like, I listen to Dana's, and I'll listen to that again probably when it comes around. I've done one Pete Holmes. I listen to a couple Nerdists. You know, I listen to them here and there. I don't have a job where I have to drive anywhere, so I don't have that opportunity that much. And when I do, like I said, I now catch up on the Marins and all that. But you do, you become attached to these people. You know, you become attached to them in a way that, like, you know, because you do start, even with Pardo, you start to, you know, you get a sense of who his kids are, what his relationship with his wife is, and obviously he went through that horrible, you know, deal with his brother-in-law a couple years ago. And, I mean, it just, you know, you start to, like, have this empathy for these people. And I also think the podcast community is strong. You know, it's funny, today some guy wrote an article on the AV Club about, are there too many podcasts? And he, you know, was saying that there's too many and that it's watering down comedy and what some of the dumb thing, you know. And I'm like, I don't think you understand a podcast if you think there's too many of them. Podcasts don't, it's not like you flip on the TV and there's another reality show in a space where you could watch something else. You have to go get a podcast, you know. Like, you don't have, it doesn't matter if there's too many of them, they're not in your way. They're literally just, it's like going into somebody else's mail. You know, it's like Dave and I send out a letter every week to the people that want our letter, and then those people write us back on Twitter. You know, like, it's not, we're not programming on a network. You're choosing us. You know, nobody chose us for you and said, this is something you will like. You know, I think that's the difference between us and, you know, Earwolf, which I'm not against. I think there's great shows on Earwolf, but I'm saying Earwolf selects things and says, you will like these things. And then they're all judged on what the Earwolf brand is and whether people like this show on Earwolf because they listen to these other Earwolf shows. With us, you just got two retards. You either like these two retards or you don't. That's it. We don't make anything else.
Wow. That was very succinct.
Well, I've thought about this a lot because I have a lot of gratitude for podcasting. I have a lot of gratitude for what it is, and I love the people that do it, and I'm not against anybody's. I have no professional jealousies. I don't go on iTunes to look where our ratings are. I don't read, you know, unless somebody wrote a very nice review today, but I generally don't read reviews either. It's because I'm not doing it for those things. I'm just doing it for the person who listens.
So you're not trying to win at podcasts?
I'm not trying, no. No, when I try and win at things, it doesn't go well. I think we have I'm very, very proud of what we do. I think we have a very successful podcast. I think what we do is unique, and it's ours, and it's not like anybody else's, and it's not for everybody, you know. But it is, it's pure, it's absolutely, it has our complete and total artistic integrity. I think I can't say that about all of the things that I've done where I felt like it had complete and total artistic integrity. I feel that way about my band. I feel that way, not always about my stand-up. I haven't loved all my stand-up. I think there have been periods where I tried to do things with it that I maybe shouldn't have, or I went in certain directions because I thought that they would be cool or whatever. I'm not, you know, I don't think it's as pure as it could have been. But I am also very, as much as I'm, those books are the bane of my existence, they're absolutely purely, honestly true. They're things that I believe that I put down on paper because I thought that they would be useful.
I don't think anybody could really argue with that. I think people are just weird sometimes. They want to put, like you said, they want to put people in a place, and they, when they saw that book, they wanted to put you in that place. But you are, again, a man of many, many hats, and it's very impressive. I just wanted to be able to thank you.
Sure.
And also, at the same time, and I just wanted to put this out there because I just think it's so funny, is that I'm going through something called rejection therapy. It's basically, there's science that says that rejection, the pain that you feel when you're rejected, is actually felt in the same part of the brain where you feel physical pain. So if after, so what you do is for 30 days, you go out of your way to once a day get rejected. And it sort of is like a conditioning. You build a tolerance to it. And then at the end of it, you sort of no longer behave in fear of rejection. And it's sort of the idea that successful people are known to be, quote unquote, more fearless. And so I was trying to get rejected when I asked you to do this podcast, to be completely honest with you.
Shit. Well, you asked the wrong guy. You should ask Dave. You should ask Dave. I'm easy. Like, if somebody says to me, I want to interview you and I want to talk about your podcast, I'll fucking do it. You know, if somebody says, I want to interview, I want to talk about your book, I would, like, you should ask me, you know, talk about relationships. What an interesting thing that you're doing. Is that is it working?
You wouldn't believe. It really truly is, because I found, this is just weirdly interesting, that it's like threefold, in that the lessons are threefold, in that one, you start to understand the power dynamic better, mm-hmm. and you become more respectful when you ask for something, and that's always good. The other one being is that it is the conditioning, so you don't really fear rejection so much, and that's good. And then the third one being, and this is proof of it right now, is that you can get yeses.
And so, totally.
Yeah, and that just kind of blows
that's
my mind. Yeah,
yeah, and that's really interesting. I was, you'll hear when we talk about this tomorrow on the podcast, but this has to do with a book that I was working on. But I... somebody was talking to me about women, and I said, you know, that women were never a big deal for me. Like I wasn't afraid of women. And someone said, well, that's not common. I said, well, my thing was, I was so bad at everything, and I did so poorly at sports. I was like, what the fuck difference does women make? I mean, that's just another thing I'm going to be shitty at. So what the fuck? So I asked women out all the time. And all the time I wasn't weird about it, but I got kind of a thrill out of will she or won't she? And I think because I had, and I think that's the other thing about Hollywood too, is that there's a lot of rejection here. I mean, fuck, I faced a lot. I mean, in this past 4 years, you know, I'm like literally the king of nope. Where, you know, I agree with you, it's tough, but you do, you know, you bounce back, because what the fuck, you know? It's just a no, and it does mean that you're a bad person. It just means that, you know, you just look at them like doors, like that door just didn't fucking open. I'll try another one. One of them's going to open, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, and it, again, worked out really well, because, I am infinitely grateful to talk to you, because it's actually, weirdly enough, and this is getting into a whole thing that I don't want to get into, because yep. that's not what my thing is. But anyway, is that I kind of lost my mind and like went to the 9th floor, if you know what that means. And coming out of it, I was using comedy to kind of help get to a better place, because it allows me at least to be more honest in certain ways. And listening to you on your podcast and being so honest, and then you going through your tough times and coming out of them, has actually kind of helped me a little bit. So I am very grateful. I just wanted to let you know that.
Oh, yeah, man. No, totally, man. I appreciate that. Look, I mean, it is a total give and take. You know, I wrote that thing in the Hot Dog Thunderdome the other day thanking everybody for their concern when I got upset and tweeted. And I feel like that is what this community is. And it is sort of a community. It isn't just a podcast, and it isn't just a... it isn't just fans and you know, and two guys that are there are stars or whatever. It's not, you know, it is sort of like, hey, look, we have this thing and we do it and we share with you and you share back. And you know, I genuinely go in as much as I can, and there's a lot of people in there now, so it's hard, but I go in and try and read everyone's fucking shit in that place. There's a couple guys, there's one guy that's been writing there for a while, I'm like, I'm trying to figure out how I can get the guy a book deal.
Oh, yeah,
another guy
who's writing the stories about the episodes, right?
Yeah, Richard.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I mean, there's just guy, like, I'm just like, look, he's talented. I have no, maybe I can't help him at all. Maybe there's nothing I can do for him. But I know enough people that I'm like, oh, fuck, maybe I could run his stories by this guy, or maybe this is a short film, or maybe, I don't know. But, you know, that's like, it's exciting for me. I don't want to have to spend the rest of my life talking about what Greg Barron's going to do next. You know, part of the reason I play in a band is because I don't want to be the only guy in front of the mic. The part of the reason I love doing the podcast so much is that fuck, sometimes Dave just talks. I don't have to do shit. I mean, I've spent so much of my career worrying about whether Greg Barron's going to get his or whether Greg Barron's going to do this. And when Dave Anthony's talking and all I have to do is sort of do the color on the play-by-play story about his fucking mother-in-law, I'm fucking in pig. I'm like in a pig and slop. Like, oh, fuck, I don't have to. This isn't. I don't have to carry this thing on my shoulders. You know, I'm helping this thing along. And I think there's something kind of exciting about that, you know, community, about doing things, not feeling like you always have to do things alone. You know, that there are other people to do things with. And that sort of is what the whole fucking thing is about.
Absolutely. You know? I could not agree more, or could not disagree more. I really agree with that statement.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, you cannot disagree less.
Exactly, exactly. Well, I've been timing. This is half an hour. I don't want to keep you any longer. But real quick,
okay.
Do you want to plug... Let's see, because you have, coming up, you have next week is New York, right? Brooklyn?
Next week is, yes. On Friday night, the band, the Monarch, Rainy Monarchs, are playing at the Grand Victory in Brooklyn. And I'm not sure, I think it's at 8 o'clock. And then Starfish Circus at the Bell House on the 10th. And then I come home, I do some stuff in L.A., and then Dave and I go to Australia.
Oh.
To do the Australian Comedy Festival and to do a podcast down there and do some shows and hang out.
Awesome.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing.
Sounds great. Well, again, just thank you very much, man, for your time and for everything.
Yeah.
from the community. We really appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you, and thanks for contacting me and asking me to do it.
No problem, man. You take care.
Talk soon.
Bye.
Oh, snap!
That just happened, yo. You guys thought I was joking, like I was faking, like I was lying. It was a real interview with Greg Barrett. Nice guy. Undeniably nice. Undeniably nicer than me. I was a dick in a lot of that interview. I really... I gotta send that guy a thank you and an apology. Maybe some Mylar balloons, something, to let him know that I appreciate it and that I shouldn't have said some of the things I did. But that happened, and that was cool, right, you guys? Was it not cool? Was it just me? I talked for a little bit there. I realize it was... There's a point where it stopped being an interview, and it started to be a conversation, and that got weird, right? Like, you weren't expecting that. Neither was I, really. But it happened, right? And we're just going to move forward. We're just going to grow from it together. Oh my God, you guys. So I'm into this new thing. It's like crayon art. It's basically, you just melt crayons to, like, on a canvas or paper or various and sundry, well, whatever your canvas is. I actually used a napkin earlier. It was way too much fun. I'm just melting crayons and having inordinate amounts of fun. I don't see why we make children color with them. As we all know, crayons are the worst. That's why it's so much fun to melt them. We should let kids melt them. Yes, I did give myself a third-degree burn earlier this evening. But you know what? Children need to learn somehow, right? Like, there's got to be a moment in a child's life when that child realizes that hot crayon wax is going to really hurt him or her, and she or he needs to avoid touching it. Right? That seems like it should be a common lesson learned. Something in an Aesop's Fables, perchance? A Grimm's Fairy Tales? I mispronounce words sometimes. I apologize. You guys, this has been a kind of a quick show. I really just wanted to showcase the interview. And to be completely honest, that is going to be the format of the show. If I get a professional comedian that I can talk to for half an hour, I'm not going to water down the show with a lot of my BS. I'm just going to make it very that person-centric, as this one is very Greg Barrett-centric, and I hope that's cool with you guys. Seriously, all you have to do, we got a small glue gun, and you take the crayon and you unwrap it, you take the paper off, and then you just put it through like it was the glue stick, and then you can kind of just like shoot it at the canvas, and it's just you the colors, they blend and change, and then you can use a hair dryer, just a simple hair dryer that gets, you know, pretty hot, and you can blow dry it and like mix and melt the colors all together. It's so fantastically fun. It just fills my heart with joy. Anyway, great interview, and I'm hoping to get more like this in the future. I can pretty much guarantee that next week's episode will feature another amazing guest. If you want to know who it is, I'm not BSing at all. It's pretty awesome. She is a hilarious and an amazing lady, and responsible for one of the biggest comedy festivals in the Western United States, as far as anybody is concerned. And anyway, if you want to know more, and if you haven't guessed who it is already, please go check out Premier Variety Showcase Presents, the fan page at Facebook, or go and follow me, Nathan_Guerra, on Twitter, or follow Spotlight Follies, and you will find out who the upcoming guests will be, and they're just going to get better and better thanks to you guys. Again, I wouldn't have been able to talk to a guy who's someone I look up to in the comedy world. I wouldn't be able to do that if it wasn't for you people and you being an audience. So thank you very much. I owe you the world. And also, what took you guys so long? This was the 10th episode. For 9, I had to just, God, talk out of my ass and write weird sketches and just torture you with some of the oddest stuff. You guys, get off your couches. Put down the bongs, okay? Wipe off your Cheeto fingers and keep commenting and rating, because that's what helps us. Okay? Help me help you. Actually, just help me. Just help me, you guys. I'm gonna admit, I'm a little selfish. Just help me. I'm gonna go treat my burns. They're pretty bad. I took a pill, and it looked a lot like a Mike and Ike. It might have been a Mike and Ike. I think I just ate a Mike and Ike, you guys. I didn't take a pill. God, candy is good. Oh, and I just had a Cadbury cream egg. Oh, dude. Easter, you son of a bitch. Anyway, that's been the show. Thanks again, you guys. I'm out. Thank you. And good night. Take us away, reigning monarchs. We'll be right back.
many thanks to Greg Barrett. Be sure to go check out Greg Barrett at gregbarrett.com, walkingtheroom.com, and also the Hot Dog Thunderdome. Walking the Room is available via iTunes. Download, rate, comment, subscribe, and join. Quite frankly, if you don't, you're a son of a bitch.